Picture this, you're sitting down to watch a live poetry performance. The first poet takes the stage, and as they begin to read, they're accompanied by a live jazz band. If this sounds intriguing, well, you're in luck. International Jazz Poetry Month returns to Pittsburgh on May 2nd. The festival features more than 50 artists, including local jazz icons and poets from Algeria, Cuba, Sudan, and Ukraine. They're all part of City of Asylum's Exiled Writers Program. Tickets to watch online or in person at City of Asylum's home on the north side are free. Get yours at cityofasylum.org before they're gone.
Today on CityCast Pittsburgh, it's the Friday News Roundup. I'm with CityCast Mallory Falk and Elizabeth Kama talking about all the stories we couldn't get enough of this week. It's Friday, January 27th. I'm Morgan Moody, and this is CityCast Pittsburgh. Mallory, did you have a phone when you were in school, and was it a distraction to you?
I had a cell phone. This might age me a bit. I had one toward the very end of high school. It could make calls, and I could play that game Snake on it, which was a bit of a distraction.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't ever actually remember having it in school. I think it was just like if I would go out on the weekends, it was a way, you know, if there was some kind of emergency, I could call my parents for a ride or something.
What about you, Elizabeth? You're our Gen Z-er. Have you just always grown up with an iPhone?
Yeah, I mean, I had an iPhone all throughout high school, in middle school.
Were you able to have it, like, in class?
I mean, teachers would, like, take it if it was a distraction and you'd have to come and collect it from the front office. But, yeah, I had a phone.
Did you have one, Morgan?
I did. I had one, but kind of like, you know, same boat. It didn't really have – we didn't have internet. or the internet cost us a lot of money to get on at that time. So like texting mostly was the thing that like we were doing. So no internet and it was still a distraction. So there's a Pittsburgh public school that's having students turn their phones off and lock them away during the day. Obama Academy started using those Yonder pouches that have you ever used those like at concerts or at shows?
I had to use one when I went to go see the John Mulaney show when he came to Pittsburgh. They had us like lock our phone away. I was thinking like maybe it's for when he does a special with those jokes.
Yeah.
So I wasn't that sad, although I did kind of want to take a picture of like me at the place to prove that I was there. But it's okay. Not everything
didn't
has to be
happen
documented.
If you didn't put it on the gram.
Yeah.
You were never there. Yeah. I do feel like this a little bit of like anxiety when I have to like put my phone away in those things. But also, I guess it makes me a little bit more present. The pouches are locked by magnets and students get their phones back at the end of the day. I found this story through our partner's public source. The reporting is by Terry and Bell. The principal at Obama, Yolanda Colbert, said that the data from the 2021-2022 school year involving students and their phone usage during the day was alarming. Mm-hmm. Again, not really a surprise. You know, 90% of students were not using their phone for education, but they're using it for, you know, social media, texting. Again, not a surprise. but there was also an increase in kids like experiencing, you know, anxiety and not wanting to come to school because of like cyberbullying, you know, because they're constantly on their phones and able to post things and able to see, you know, when people are, cyberbullying's terrible.
These stories always make me really grateful to have graduated in the early aughts before this stuff really existed.
And I mean, we had MySpace and like there was MySpace drama happening then, but it wasn't like the most accessible on my phone.
I'm glad that I graduated before TikTok was a thing, but there was definitely cyberbullying in like middle school through high school on social media apps. But like how long has Obama been using the pouches? You know, is it working?
Well, the principal said they got them on November 1st of last year and started using them almost immediately. The thing is that teachers like are already dealing with the stress that is our education system in this country, you know, but they're also competing to keep these students' attention. You're right, because of things like TikTok, like and Instagram and Twitter, the way we take in and process information has changed. Technology has evolved, and administrators, you know, said that that is reflected in how the students engage with them in the classroom.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And I get that, you know, having a phone would be distracting. Just having that one game Snake on my phone could get distracting during class. But I don't know, is there an argument to be made that during emergencies, it's important for students to have phones on them?
Yeah, so at Obama, you know, their process is that if a parent is trying to get in touch with them, they can be excused to the office to use their phone. If they're not feeling well, you know, and they go to the nurse will assess them and decide, you know, if the student, you know, needs to use their phone for that emergency. Mm-hmm. So it is like case by case, and it's also primarily up to the administrators.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. But for me, I feel like safety in schools can't be overlooked. I mean, even when I was in high school, I was thinking a lot about, you know, mass shootings and like, who would I text or what would I do or how would I use my phone in that scenario?
Isn't it horrible that that's a concern that like,
right,
maybe students need phones so that they can text? You know, I think we've seen after some of these school shootings, messages, the final messages kids send to their families. It's just, I don't know. It's just heartbreaking to think that that's like something that pops in people's minds when it comes to why they would need access to a cell phone in school.
Mm-hmm.
What about like parents and students? How do they feel about that policy? Because I feel like I would be like anxious.
I think that's really what both sides were expressing. Some parents that talked to Tarian said that, you know, they understood the need for the policy, but that they weren't totally comfortable with having no access to their child or their child not having, you know, immediate access to them. And that's not just in, you know, God forbid, like that's not just in a scenario where it is a mass shooting. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, if you have a family emergency or, you know, yeah, if your child might have medical needs or something like that. We just, you know, we just haven't done anything about gun control in this country. And it is it's a constant and unfortunate reality. And until something is done, these students feel anxious about not having, you know, access that they might need. And again, that's for whatever reason. And the parents seem to feel the same way.
So it sounds like this isn't totally popular with parents or students. Not everyone is on board. Is the school considering any changes to the policy kind of based on those responses?
Not at the moment. Principal Colbert said that Obama students, 43% of Obama students of that student body is on the honor roll or high achieving. And, you know, she wants them to maintain that academic status. We've had conversations on this podcast about the test scores in public schools around Allegheny County, you know, since the pandemic because of, mm-hmm, you know, remote learning and just the disruption in learning that they've had over the past couple of years. So it does really seem like she wants the focus to continue to be on the education. Honestly, at least until administrators can probably find a way to adjust their, you know, lessons and learning plans to adapt to the way that, you know, kids take in information now, which is in very short, you know, video increments.
We gotta make Sokotoa go viral.
Hey, CityCast listeners. This episode is brought to you by the Pittsburgh Opera. You know, a few weeks ago, some friends and I went to La Traviata, and I confess, it was my very first opera. But yens, it was incredible. So I was very excited to see that they've got a new show coming to the Byam Theater. It's April 27th through May 5th, called The Passion of Mary Caldwell Dawson. It's about a real person, a Pittsburgher and heroine, who in 1943 is managing a million moving pieces with the National Negro Opera Company. They're all set to perform on a floating barge just to avoid all the segregated venues, but bad weather strikes and they've got to figure out a way forward. If you want to know what happens next, you'll just have to attend. The show is in English. It does have a little dialogue. It's kind of short for something operatic, just over an hour, and tickets start at just $15. There are all kinds of discounts for students, teachers, seniors, and veterans, plus the Pittsburgh Opera's new rideshare program gives patrons up to $60 worth of Uber vouchers to get them to and from the show. If this sounds up your alley, get your tickets now for The Passion of Mary Caldwell Dawson at pittsburghopera.org.
Speaking of teenagers, I want to talk about teenagers downtown. Morgan, you're downtown a lot. Do you feel like you've been noticing it get a little bit more chaotic down there recently?
It makes me feel like an old geezer if I sit here and complain about the teenagers downtown. But like, oh man, it's not that I want to say it's a problem, but what I do notice is that it just really seems like even in the morning and, you know, after school that like they're not in any programs or like they don't really have anywhere to go. So they're hanging out, you know, the way that kids would. But
yeah, I mean, well, you're not the only person who's noticed that. Business owners have been talking about it as well. Apparently, you know, kids and teenagers are heading down there after school. And, you know, that's been of some concern to the business owners downtown. Mm-hmm.
Is there a sense why maybe more teenagers are hanging out downtown than there used to be in the past?
Yeah, according to reporting that WSA has done, downtown has sort of become like a quote unquote happening place to hang out, like the mall in like the 80s or 90s or whatever.
Oh, man.
Teens like are regularly going to specifically the McDonald's by Market Square and then hanging out in the Market Square after school. Since downtown is easy to get to on public transit and kids are already relying on PRT since we have a school bus driver shortage, Pittsburgh Public Schools is providing them with bus passes to get to school. So going downtown on the bus, you know, before heading home is like easy for them. And since
a lot of buses pass through downtown, like downtown is where, you know, you transfer to a lot of lines.
Yeah. And so they just like go downtown and hang out and then they transfer to go back home. I should mention that like it's not just downtown. Businesses in Squirrel Hill, you know, by Alderdice have reported similar issues with a lot of teenage foot traffic after schools.
I love my teens. I love my youth. But like, you know, yeah, it is. It can be. They're a rowdy bunch. They've got a lot of energy. And on top of having a lot of energy, they also don't have like a lot of money. So like,
yeah.
what issues have businesses been facing? Like, what do they mean when they say they're having issues with the kids?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a variety of things that business owners told WSA, like from like just like nuisance things to like actual violence. The owner of Simple Greek in Market Square said that she had like teens trying to steal from the tip jar, get food without paying. She said that once when she confronted a girl about, you know, stealing soda from the soda fountain, the girl threw soda in her face.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Other businesses have also like talked about tip stealing as like a general issue. One of the managers at CityWorks told WSA that some teenagers pepper sprayed a bartender who was stopping them from stealing tips. So, you know, it's actually progressed to real violence.
Wow.
There's also just like the issue of like drama and fighting and that's happening like outside and around these businesses, you know, beyond the feeling of like being unsafe due to like the fights and the teenagers pepper spraying bartenders. Business owners have also reported some property damage as a result of like these scuffles that are happening. Businesses have had like windows and doors broken.
That happened at that hair salon, Cardamom's. Yeah, downtown.
A kid got pushed into the window during a fight and the window broke and they had to board it up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the businesses who talked to WSA said that, you know, some of these damages have been paid back by parents. So, you know, it hasn't cost significant direct harm to the businesses, but the fear of coming downtown for both customers and workers has had a real effect on their business.
I mean, so how widespread is this? Like, is there actual data to back up what these business owners are saying, or are these, you know, a couple of one-offs that are very unfortunate? Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, what's the data on this?
Yeah, so downtown has always experienced like the highest level of crime according to police data, and this is part of that trend. Data shows that, you know, property and violence offenses have gone up to pre-pandemic levels. So it may feel like a lot to us because we haven't experienced it for like a minute because we've all been in lockdown, but it isn't like record-setting levels. Mm-hmm. And there is some evidence that it is young adults really contributing to this, at least for like lower level crimes such as shoplifting, harassment, fighting. Last year through October, police issued double the average citations for people 19 and younger, like double the average from the past 3 years leading up to the pandemic. Mm. However, like arrests for young people have fallen by 20% over that same period. Mm-hmm. WSA is doing some really great reporting on this area and looking into kind of what teens are saying or what they want. But it seems like there's just a real appetite from teenagers to really just be out in public. You know, they were in their houses for 3 years, and it seems like this is kind of a rebound of, you know, after being stuffed up in their houses, now they're like out and exploring the city and being rowdy.
Yeah. I mean, are there measures to kind of create more spaces where people can go? Because I totally get that. Like, you've been cooped up, you've been locked down. You want to be able to be out in the city now, be out with your friends. Mm-hmm. What does the landscape look like in terms of places where young people can go to hang out, especially downtown if they're, you know, waiting for their next bus?
Yeah, I mean, the teens that WSA spoke to said that they're really interested in having these like spaces. Like, some have said that they want more indoor spaces, some are more interested in like free recreational options. There is like a move to kind of do something about this. Business owners are upset. City officials are like trying to think of measures. I mean, we spoke about one of the measures that was proposed to stop this last week on Friday News Roundup, which was the proposed enforced youth curfew. Which is, you know, since been put on the wayside, on the back burner, because it got a lot of pushback. Now the move is to kind of create resource centers. City Council proposed that on Wednesday, which would provide like social services for kids and families and neighborhoods with higher rates of youth violence. So that would create like a space for them to go.
And this doesn't have the same pushback as the enforced curfew, right?
No. I mean, Mayor Ed Gainey actually came out against the enforced youth curfew, but he's in favor of the resource centers.
Well, speaking of Ed Gainey and measures that he supports, we touched on this in yesterday's newscast, but I wanted to talk a little bit more about it today. Mayor Gainey is taking steps to maybe get some of the city's biggest nonprofits to pay property taxes. This is something we've talked about before. We'll put a link in our show notes to our interview with Emma Foltz from Public Source about all this, but there's been a push for a while now to get Pittsburgh's five big eds and meds. Mm-hmm. So Pitt, Duquesne, UPMC, Allegheny Health Network, CMU, to pay their fair share to the city. If you think they're kind of not already contributing their fair share in other ways with other services they provide. This was a big part of Gainey's campaign for mayor, and he was especially focused on UPMC, which, as Public Source puts it, has the most property and the most money at stake. And so this Tuesday, Gainey signed an executive order that seems like a way to try to make good on his campaign promise to get some of these big nonprofits to pay up.
Yeah, so I wasn't here when you guys did that interview with Emma Foltz, and I think she's an incredible reporter. But before we get on to kind of the executive order, can you just remind me and, you know, the other listeners who may not have listened to that episode, why it matters whether or not these nonprofits pay property taxes? I mean, I get the frustration. I mean, I've got to pay them. They should too. But like, what's the impact here?
Yeah, so about 20% of land in Pittsburgh is privately owned but tax exempt. And so that means that there's a lot of property that the city just isn't collecting taxes on. There was a joint report that came out from the city and county controllers in 2021, and it found that these five big eds and meds owned about $4.3 billion in property that's exempt from property taxes, just property taxes levied by the city alone.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, which is a lot. And nearly two-thirds of those properties are within city limits. And, you know, Pittsburgh's not in, like, amazing financial shape.
I know it. They keep giving me these parking tickets. That's how they're making up for all of this.
Yeah. Like, why is this falling to you and your parking tickets instead of these giant institutions?
Morgan's saving the city.
Yeah. I'm paying on this $4.3 billion property tax $40 at a time.
Yeah. You alone are going to keep the city afloat for the next several years. Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously not saying anything no people don't know, but you know, there's been some federal COVID relief funds that have helped, you know, get the city through the last few years, but those are going to run out. So this would be a sustainable source of revenue for the city if, you know, some of these nonprofits had to pay property taxes. And Emma had pointed out in her reporting and in our conversation that these institutions often end up using city services that they're not paying for. So she gave an example of this dorm on the Pitt campus that had placed a ton of calls to 911 needing police services, EMS, firefighters, and for everything from like real medical emergencies to one example she gave was, you know, typical dorm behavior. A kid like burned their mac and cheese in the dorm microwave and the fire department had to come out. But so, you know, every time, you know, EMS comes to the dorm, that's like a city service that Pittsburgh is providing that Pitt, in this example, isn't paying for. And so that's, you know, where some of this argument is coming from is if you're going to use these services, you need to contribute to them.
So then what is the executive order?
Yeah, so the Ganey administration is launching a citywide review of tax-exempt properties to determine whether they're owned by an institution of purely public charity. That's the language in the state law that allows for these tax exemptions. So basically, all of these properties would need to pass a test to see if they meet five criteria that under the state law allow them to qualify as a purely public charity.
Purely public charity sounds like a very high bar to meet. What are the criteria?
Yeah, so it means that the group has to advance a charitable purpose, donate a substantial portion of its services, benefit a class of people that are legitimate subjects of charity, relieve the government of, you know, a burden that it would have to provide otherwise, and operate without seeking a profit.
If they don't pass that test, will they lose their nonprofit status?
No. So the city solicitor said that, you know, even if the city is able to successfully challenge a tax exemption, donations to the nonprofit would still be deductible. It would still have that nonprofit status. It would just have to start paying these property taxes.
So is just the big five, you know, the universities and the healthcare giants, is it just those groups that are getting reviewed?
No, Ganey's spokesperson said this is about every charity in the city. It's not just limited to the big five, but houses of worship, places like churches and synagogues won't be getting reviewed. This doesn't really apply to religious institutions.
Okay.
But the thing is, even though Ganey hasn't said it explicitly, it does feel like the biggest target here is UPMC. That's really who he talked about during his campaign. He said that the region's most profitable corporation should pay taxes like anyone else. And, you know, I mentioned it has kind of the most property. According to public source, UPMC owns a quarter of the city's privately owned tax-exempt property that's worth $1.7 billion.
Oof.
And if it could get taxed, then the city would get almost like $14 million a year in taxes from UPMC. About $35 million would go to city schools and $9 million would go to the county.
Yeah, UPMC has so much property. I know that Darwin Luba, who's the auditor for O'Hare Township, is actually like going around and cataloging parking lots specifically that UPMC owns to see if they should be taxed. But yeah, I don't know. What are... how is the city going to review all of these properties? Are they going to review them each like one by one separately?
Yeah, they're reviewing everything parcel by parcel. And it's interesting that you bring up parking lots because I actually heard a WESA reporter, Kylie Kaczynski, on The Confluence, and she used parking lots as an example of, you know, obviously, institutions like UPMC have a ton of them. And in her words, these parking lots could be determined to be unrelated to the mission of a nonprofit.
Mm.
Kevin Gavin, the host of The Confluence, in that same conversation brought up the examples of like Pitt and Duquesne have these basketball stadiums that generate profit. And so it's really going to be a case-by-case basis whether these, you know, properties meet the charitable criteria.
Is this realistic, though? Because UPMC has somehow come up with the receipts that they are, in fact, 100% a charitable organization. And yeah, I don't know. What are the odds of some of these nonprofits failing the test? And how soon would the city be able to start collecting money if they did?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I don't really know about the odds that they'd fail, but the city solicitor, you know, acknowledged that this review of these properties will likely take years and nonprofits are going to be able to challenge the results. So it'll be a while before we know if anyone does lose their tax-exempt status and if the city is going to start getting money from some of these entities.
Was Ganey the first mayor to try and do something like this? Maybe it's just because I'm young, but this is the first time that I'm like hearing of this.
Oh, Elizabeth, this fight predates your time. Yeah, Lou Gravenstahl, well, I guess you were born earlier than 2013, but Lou Gravenstahl back in 2013 when he was mayor sued UPMC trying to challenge its charitable status. And so then after him, Bill Peduto dropped the lawsuit and formed the One Pittsburgh program, which tried to get nonprofits to make voluntary contributions. Emma talked about how, like, you know, both in Pittsburgh and in other places that are other cities that are dealing with this, there's, you know, the carrot or the stick. And so we've seen both the stick, the lawsuit, the carrot, the like voluntarily make contributions to this fund. When Gainey took office, he pulled out of the One Pittsburgh Fund. Everyone was kind of waiting to see what he'd do and if he'd try to fulfill his campaign promise. And so now we're seeing the next step in this ongoing saga.
Yeah. Volunteer to give over millions of dollars. How have the nonprofits responded?
Yeah, so I mean, some of these big nonprofits have argued for a while now that they bring a lot of benefit to Pittsburgh. They create jobs, they provide education, at least kind of in the public statements, they seem to be reinforcing that they feel like they're, you know, already contributing to the city and will cooperate with the mayor going forward.
Yeah, is there a way for the public to weigh in? I know a lot of people who would like to say some things about this.
Yeah, there is, in fact. So the city does plan to start reviewing nonprofits that have the largest properties. But they're also calling on us, like, if any of you know of a public charity that you think is violating one or more of those requirements laid out in state law for something to be, have this charitable status, you can report it to the city. They set up an email account, report@pittsburghpa.gov, that you can write in. Gainey's asked, like, if you go somewhere and it's a charity, but you're paying market rate for the service you get there, you should let the city know. And then he also said the city should know if a charity is, in his words, just a front for someone to pay themselves a higher salary and deduct the cost of their cars.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems a little weird to want to tell on, you know, a charity. Even I want to leave it up to the universe that, you know, maybe karma will get that person and it's not from my hot tip. That's all for today here on CityCast Pittsburgh. Our team this week includes Meg Dalton, Elizabeth Kama, Mallory Falk, Francesca DeBecco, and me, Morgan Moody. Music's by Benji. And we'll be back on Monday with more news from around the city. So we'll see you then.
But my complaints aren't anonymous.
No, you say it to his face.